Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Well, this got my attention, I have to say. Pro Football Focus, Sam Monson, who is the lead NFL writer, wrote a post, I read it this morning, says the Bills, the Buffalo Bills, have the best wide receiver core, the best wide receiver group in the NFL. Sam Monson is on the line with us, I believe. Sam, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How's it going, guys?
Good. Not since the days of Andre Reed, James Lofton, and my partner Steve Tasker has anybody thought the Bills had the best wide receiver core in the NFL. What are you thinking there, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, I like the guys that they had brought in a year ago, Beasley and John Brown. I think that they were getting the right type of receiver. And then you bring in a Stephon Diggs, and it just catapults that group to a completely different level. And, you know, I'd always kind of thought that Stephon Diggs was a very good player anyway. And just from diving into the research and his tape to do this article, if anything, my opinion of him only went up. I mean, he is good at everything you need to be a wide receiver. And if you look at his production, the sort of the relative lack of production compared with, you know, superstars like Julio Jones or DeAndre Hopkins or the guys at the very top of the NFL list, I don't think the reason that he's not at that level is anything due to him. I think it's just because he's been in a run-first offense in Minnesota. He emerged kind of at the same time as Adam Thielen, so they inherently, you know, took some targets and took some production away from each other. But I think that you plug, you know, Stephon Diggs into the same situation as those other guys, and you get pretty much the same results.
Yeah, you made a great point about one of the complaints that Stephon Diggs had last year was the lack of targets. I mean, he just didn't get the ball enough from Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, an accurate thrower of the football, not the rocket arm, not a huge arm like Josh Allen, but it's going to be kind of a balance. You kind of expect, your thought was that Steph Diggs might get a lot more targets in Buffalo than he did in the run-first offense in Minnesota, but the quarterback throwing them might be a little less accurate. So the net give and take of that, going from fewer targets and a more accurate quarterback to more targets and a less accurate quarterback, may be what makes this Steph Diggs trade, makes us able to evaluate it.
Right. It's going to be an interesting balance because, you know, obviously he grew frustrated with his time in Minnesota that the ball just wasn't coming his way enough. But when the ball did come his way, it tended to be pretty accurate. And Cousins, you know, threw some absolute dimes to Diggs over the past couple of seasons that a lot of quarterbacks would not have made. A lot of quarterbacks would not have put the ball where it needed to go and give Diggs a shot to make those catches. But, you know, Diggs was getting frustrated. Now, I don't know how much more or less frustrated he would be if he got a lot more passes come his way, but they didn't have the same level of accuracy. You know, they asked a lot more of him, and it's going to be interesting to watch. Does he get frustrated in Buffalo as well if the accuracy does become a problem, or is he happy with just being given more opportunities, whether the ball is necessarily where it needs to be or not? But I think the real key thing that the Bills have done over the past 2 years now is they've targeted receivers that specialize in getting separation. And I think that is such a smart thing to do in today's NFL. You know, we look for, when we're evaluating receivers, what should we be trying to identify as their single biggest trait? And for me, that's the key thing. You don't need to be, you know, 6'3 and 220 pounds. If you get open, that's the single biggest thing you can do for a quarterback in terms of maximizing the window he has to throw you the ball.
We're with Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus, who says the Bills have the best wide receiver core in the NFL. The question of targets, Sam, is interesting to me. And I'm wondering if we had a poll of our listeners a week or so ago about who's going to lead the team in receptions next year. And there was sort of a consensus that even though Diggs may not lead the team in receptions, Beasley might, John Brown might, he might be the most effective receiver they have. Could it be that he wouldn't lead the Bills in receptions, even if they focus on him as a target in the passing game?
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I don't see a reason why he wouldn't. You know, if you look last season, John Brown, like typically the slot guy would be the guy that would be a threat to take to lead the team in receptions, just from an efficiency standpoint. You know, a lot of teams will feed those guys the ball underneath, and they get a ton of targets and a ton of receptions, and you might get more catches than your quote-unquote number one receiver, but it's a very different type of pass being sent your way. But even last season, you know, John Brown had more targets, more receptions than Cole Beasley did. And, you know, Stephon Diggs should step in above John Brown as a true sort of number one when it comes to target share. So, yeah, I don't see a good reason why Diggs wouldn't get the most targets and the most receptions on the team.
How high does this elevate the expectations for Josh Allen's improvement?
Yeah, I think it has to be high. I mean, between this, between them surrounding him with the right type of receivers, between the Patriots losing Tom Brady and the door suddenly being wide open in the AFC East, I think expectations have to be huge for Buffalo right now, not just Josh Allen and his development to take another step forward and sort of meet this receiving core where it should be, but also the whole team in terms of taking a step forward and being a not just a team that hopes they can snatch the AFC East if the Patriots have a down year, but a team that expects to win that division and contend in the playoffs.
We're on the line with Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus lead NFL writer, the host of the Pro Football Focus NFL show. You say the Bills may have the best wide receiver group in the NFL. It's not just Diggs, right? Can you talk – you've talked about Brown and Beasley. Is there anybody else who kind of – factors into that consideration? Isaiah McKenzie, we just had him on the show yesterday, maybe. Andre Roberts, anybody else who would contribute to them being the best receiver group in the NFL? What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've got some interesting players like McKenzie and like Roberts further down, but it's really about that top three. And I think people underrate the quality of John Brown and Cole Beasley. You know, they dropped a couple of passes more than they should have last season, but even then, it was more when those drop passes were dropped and the sheer volume of them. They combined for 10 drops last season, which is not a huge amount when you consider they had like 200 targets thrown their way. So I think they were overall a kind of underrated receiving duo anyway. And then you bump them each down one in the depth chart. You know, now John Brown is a quality number two. Cole Beasley is a number three. And as a trio, you've got three guys that all specialize in getting open and all do it at sort of different levels of the defense as their calling card. You know, John Brown gets open deep, Cole Beasley gets open underneath, and Stephon Diggs gets open pretty much all over the field. So I think as a trio, you know, you might have receiving groups elsewhere in the NFL. You think Tampa Bay, they probably have a stronger 1-2 punch, but I don't know that anybody has a better 1-2-3 than the Bills right now.
I got to ask you as well about this Stephon Diggs trade. How can you rate how good or bad it was, given the fact that the guys you mentioned that Steph Diggs, if he was in their position, like Julio Jones, like AJ Green, like a DeAndre Hopkins, if he had been on those teams with more targets, that kind of thing, he'd have been a better player or commensurate with those guys. The Bills, with all the draft picks involved in the trade for Stephon Diggs, the Bills get him back for $11 million a year for four more years. And you put that in contrast with the contract that Amari Cooper signed, the deal that AJ Green is going to get or has in the franchise tag, Julio Jones contract. Doesn't it seem like the Steph Diggs deal turns into more of a bargain for the Bills?
I mean, I think the deal is an absolute steal for Buffalo, even if they have to extend him to a bigger contract. You know, even if they have to re-sign Diggs to a more market sort of market-appropriate contract for one of the best receivers in the NFL, I still think it's a great return. You know, they basically trade away a reasonably low first-round pick, and then, honestly, the rest of it is noise. It's I know there's a few picks that went that way, the fifth, the sixth, 2021, fourth, but you don't tend to find star players. And I know Diggs is the exception that proves that rule. He was a fifth-round player. But you look at the fifth-round picks over the past couple of seasons, there's basically been nobody. Those picks are not picks that you expect to find quality contributions from in the NFL draft. Those picks, I think, are best used in a trade like this as make weights for a proven commodity. And, you know, the Bills had a need, I think, that they wanted to attack a number one receiver, and they've got an absolute star in Stephon Diggs, and all it cost them was, you know, the best pick that they could have given up in this draft to try and find that guy anyway. So, yeah, I think it's a fantastic deal for the Bills. And if you factor in the fact that he was on a really team-friendly contract, if they keep him on that deal and don't give him a, you know, a higher paid pay rise, I think it's an absolute bargain.
Sam, any thoughts on what the Bills draft should be about now? Their first pick is not till the 54th overall selection on day two, draft round number two. What should their focus be in the draft in 3 weeks? What do you think?
Well, I think they, with the Diggs deal, they put themselves in a really good position of not having a glaring need rolling into the draft and being able to just, you know, play the cards as they're dealt. You know, the Bills can now see where the value is and whether it's adding talent to the defensive front, whether it's adding offensive line depth. They can basically, you know, play that draft as it unfolds in front of them. I think that's a great position to be in. It's kind of what free agency and trades are all about. It's about addressing your biggest concerns before you get into the draft so you don't need to go chasing value. I think there's a couple of spots where they could certainly add some depth, but this is a good-looking roster now, top to bottom.
Yeah, I agree with you. I got to ask you as well that the quarterbacks are moving around different teams. That's up and stuff. Obviously, Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, Phillip Rivers in Indianapolis. Which one of those guys, are those two veterans that we've seen play for at least a decade and a half, Tom Brady for two decades, Tom Brady or Phillip Rivers, who's in the better situation?
It's tough because I think, you know, Phillip Rivers has the best offensive line that's ever been put in front of him now in Indianapolis. And he has, you know, a really good situation in terms of play calling, the scheme there with Frank Reich. But I don't love the receivers that he's throwing to right now. He's only got T.Y. Hilton really not an awful lot yet to work with. And they traded away their first-round pick in free agency. So it's going to be tough for them to assemble a really good receiving core around him. Tampa Bay, you've got a really good receiving duo. They might have the best duo in the NFL with Godwin and Evans. The offensive line is okay, but I don't think it's a strength. And then the defense was moving in the right direction last season. So I think from a personnel standpoint, the Bucs may be a really good spot. But the question mark there is, what does this Tom Brady, Bruce Arians hybrid sort of mashup offense look like? You know, Arians has a very specific style. He hasn't tended to mold it much to the quarterbacks that have been in his systems. And Tom Brady obviously is used to something completely different. So what does that look like? And can that get the best play out of Tom Brady? I think they're both in good situations, though. I think they both turn those two teams into legitimate playoff contenders.
Sam Monson, our guest from Pro Football Focus. I want to ask you about a quarterback out west, Tyrod Taylor in the Los Angeles Chargers. Sam, are the Chargers, well, I think they are good with him as their veteran quarterback candidate, and you anticipate they'll draft a rookie as well, maybe with the sixth overall pick?
Yeah, I would expect them to draft a quarterback at the top of the draft. I don't know if they're, you know, in love enough with Justin Herbert to take him that high, or if they would look to trade down and make it happen. But there's also a possibility that, you know, Tua Tagovailoa might drop to six. Adam Schefter has come out, I know, and said the Dolphins might not be as sold on Tua as everybody thinks they are. And all of a sudden, we could see him slip down to where the Chargers pick, and he becomes their quarterback of the future. And honestly, that gives them a nice sort of bridge. You've got Tyrod Taylor there who could play for the time it takes for Tua to get himself 100% healthy and ready to go.
What about signing a guy like Cam Newton or Jameis Winston in San Diego? Certainly, you could make the case that certainly Cam Newton is an upgrade from Tyrod Taylor, maybe even Jameis Winston, if coaches feel like they can wean him off the interception train. They can cut down on his turnovers. He's got a live arm through for 5,000 yards. That's kind of the thing that speaks to NFL coaches. What about one of those two options, Jameis Winston or Cam Newton, to come in and play ahead of Tyrod Taylor if indeed they don't draft somebody, or even if they do?
Yeah, I think the fact that Bruce Arians didn't want any part of Jameis Winston in year two speaks volumes in terms of the confidence anybody has in being able to stop Jameis Winston's turnover propensity. I think, you know, Bruce Arians has always tended to have a rough first year with quarterbacks in his system, but year two is when they really start to click and cut down on the mistakes and make all those big plays. And at no point did he ever seem interested in bringing Jameis back for that year too. So I think the league is just kind of done with Jameis in terms of a starting opportunity at the moment, and he's going to have to get a sort of reclamation job as a backup and try and do what Ryan Tannehill did a season ago. And then Cam Newton, I think, you know, healthy Cam Newton obviously is a huge upgrade over Tyrod Taylor. But the last time we saw healthy Cam Newton is getting further and further in the past. And I think that's his big concern, is we don't know what the 2020 version of Cam Newton actually looks like because of all those injuries and the toll they've taken on his body. And I suspect that because of that, there aren't going to be too many teams, you know, knocking his door down to hand him a starting opportunity either.
Sam, is Washington all set with Dwayne Haskins as their starting quarterback? Do they feel like he's the guy? They made a trade for Allen, to back him up, maybe even compete for a starting job. He wants to compete for a starting job. What do you think's going on there?
I think they probably are. I think people have been looking to replace Haskins all offseason, whether it was with some of these veteran quarterbacks, whether it's drafting a guy like Tua at number two. But I think Haskins showed, I mean, not as much as any of the other rookie quarterbacks because he didn't play as much, but on a sort of per-snap basis, I think he showed a lot as a rookie. He didn't make many mistakes at all, and by the sort of later on in the season, he was making a lot more big throws. He was pushing the ball down the field. He was being more aggressive. And when you consider that he was sort of starting behind the eight ball in terms of trying to learn a difficult offense to get to grips with right away, I think he did a pretty good job. And I've never been quite sure why there's been such a rush to replace him as the starting quarterback compared with the attitudes towards, you know, Daniel Jones, Kyler Murray, even Gardner Minshew, his sort of peers as rookie quarterbacks. So I think they're probably going to give him a shot this year. Kyle Allen comes in as a backup that's familiar with the system, but it's going to be Haskins' job, and I think that's probably the right call.
Sam, they're also on the other side of the football. We've been talking about offenses and quarterbacks a little bit. The pass rushers like Everson Griffin, Jadeveon Clowney, there's some guys, and that market seems to have dried up. What are your thoughts on what the reason for that might be? Maybe those guys are two different and separate situations, but why are people and teams not interested or not, you know, beating down the door of Everson Griffin and Jadeveon Clowney?
Yeah, I think they probably are two separate situations. With Clowney, I think it's just because he wants market-setting money. He wants to be the best-paid edge rusher in the NFL, and he isn't the best edge rusher in the NFL. You know, all the data suggests, and I think looking at sacks doesn't tell the whole story, but even if you look at just pressure, he's never topped 65 pressures in a season. Last year, Za'Darius Smith led the NFL with 93. So there's a big drop-off between the top edge rushers in terms of pressure and where Jadeveon Clowney is every single season. And I think that's significant. And teams just don't want to make him the best-paid guy in the NFL when he isn't at that level. Everson Griffin, I think it's probably more of a case of it might be a case of him trying to bide his time and land in the right situation after the draft. You know, he's a guy that is still capable of getting good pressure. And to be honest, in terms of play level, there really isn't much between Jadeveon Clowney and Everson Griffin. It's just age that separates them. So Griffin might be, you know, trying to target the ideal landing spot post-draft and find a place where he can get, you know, legit or starting time and not have to worry about a rookie eating into his snaps.
Hey, Sam, the last thing I have for you, and it's back to the Bills for a second. You say the Bills could have the NFL's best receiving core this coming year. Okay, if that's to happen, how can they best take advantage of it? And in particular, through the analytical lens that Pro Football Focus specializes in, how should the offense evolve a little bit to take advantage of the good receiving core that you say they've assembled?
I honestly don't think it needs to, and that's the beauty of the type of player they've tried to assemble, is that they, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can try and maximize passing efficiency, but I think the single biggest one is getting guys that are just going to get open, because at that point, the quarterback has a bigger margin for error. You know, you think of, you know, a quick out route. If you're able to lose your man by 2 or 3 yards, suddenly the quarterback can leave that ball a little bit behind you, and it's not you don't have to worry about a pass breakup or an interception, because the cornerback is right in the receiver's hip. So that group is going to make Josh Allen more efficient because they're able to get wider open than the receivers in the past. So, yeah, I don't think they need to do a whole lot schematically to change. I think they just need to hope that Josh Allen can, you know, embrace the fact that his job is going to be made a little bit easier because he's got better receivers, and that improves everything around him.
Thanks, Sam. I appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
Dan Monson, Pro Football Focus lead NFL writer. He is the host of PFF's NFL show. I was half kidding, Steve. I don't recall anybody in recent memory saying the Bills have the best receiving core in the NFL. That got my attention this morning when I read that.
Yeah, he said, you know, going three deep down the roster, certainly Tampa Bay's got maybe a better 1-2 guy, but the Bills going down through three with John Brown, Cole Beasley, and now, of course, Stephon Diggs maybe at the top of those two. You go three deep with the Bills, and they are a handful, and I think it's a good observation by him. I don't know that I could name three other wide receivers on another NFL team so easily. Of course, I live and breathe the Bills, but you know what I mean? I mean, they do seem to have a three-headed wide receiving core that's going to give teams a lot of problems. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. If we can get our guy to throw it, we're going to be good.
And that brings me to this question I have for you, Steve Tasker, and I have an answer for this too. But with all this, keeping in mind all this, you know, good receiving core, the addition of Stephon Diggs, and that's why I asked that last question. I don't anticipate the Bills' offensive focus will change much. For instance, they're still going to want to run the ball. I think they were second and third in percentage of rushing attempts. I sure think they're still going to want to do that this coming season, don't you?
Yeah, and I think if certainly they're going to start out more so with from the get-go with Devin Singletary carrying the ball instead of Frank Gore. They trust Devin now. He's got a year under his belt in this offense. Josh Allen's going to have another year in this offense. He's going to be able to study himself, look at the films where he did leave plays on the field, get into his own mind about what his thought process on about some of the plays he missed. I just look for another step in the progress of the quarterback, and I think that will elevate everybody around him to an even greater degree. So, I think there's a lot of – there's obviously we've talked about it, and other people are seeing it. Sam Monson, for one, from Pro Football Focus. There's a lot of reason and a lot of conversation around the country about why the Bills are going to be a really, really good football team this year. I think now all we got to hope for is for the season to start on time and for us to be there watching it.
That's right. All right, we got a break here. We're coming back. Give us a call. We got lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What's the most underrated move the Bills have made so far this offseason? What do you think about Sam Monson and Pro Football Focusing? The Bills have the best wide receiving group in the NFL. Lines open to talk about that when we come back. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. The Seneca Studio remains shut down. Steve's at home. I'm at home. We're coming to you on Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. One Bills Live. We're doing it from home, not from the Seneca Studio. John Murphy and my kitchen. Steve Tasker is in his den. Hey, if you missed a segment of the show, say you like to hear what Sam Monson said about the Bills having the number one wide receiver group in the NFL, you can always go to our podcasted shows at BuffaloBills.com, the Bills app, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. You can always stream the show live on the Bills app. So there are alternatives if you're not able to listen today. Radio only today. You miss being on TV, Steve?
I do not.
I don't either.
I got to be honest with you.
For the record, and I shaved Monday. What's Tuesday? We're shaved. We look, you know, I get up and take a shower and dress every day. It's not like we're doing we were tempted, I think. Weren't you tempted? We talked about it. Are you going to wear pants when you do the show? No, of course I'm wearing pants, right? I won't. You're wearing pants, aren't you?
I do. Listen, I put myself together for the show. I do. I don't just show up in my pajamas and a t-shirt. Right. And, you know, I do eat a lot more since I'm in my house. I do eat a lot more while we're on the air during the breaks and stuff like that. I'll get something to drink. I can get up and walk around. I don't do that as much when we're in the studio on TV.
I agree.
But now, you know, you can get to the refrigerator and back in time in the break. So it's, you know, I will confess to that.
I'm doing the show, and only because the Wi-Fi is strongest in our kitchen. I do the show in the kitchen. It's a constant battle not to grab something to eat every break. I did grab some soup, by the way.
Did you put any weight on over the?
No, because I don't eat much. I just eat during the show when I usually don't.
Yeah, I kind of find myself grazing all day, you know, which is total death. So but now, you know, like on a day like today where it's sunny and getting a little warmer, I'll be outside and I'll do some stuff. So it'll be good, a good break. Welcome,
John. Did you do anything fun last night?
No, I watched the program. We kind of stay busy during the day with the show and stuff, and then we'll go out. We ran errands last night. And in fact, You know, we've got Amanda Farrell from Connect Life coming on later in the show.
Yep.
And that was total coincidence. I was at Connect Life last night and I gave blood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I had no idea that, well, up until I found out yesterday she was coming on the show, I had the appointment, and so I went in and gave a pint of blood last night, and so did my wife, so we did that, and perfect preparation for having Amanda Farrell from Connect Life on, which is exactly where I gave my donation. So that's what we did kind of last night.
It's coming on at 2:30. I watched, remember I was complaining about this a week or two ago, the Ken Burns baseball series?
Yeah.
And I watched it again last night. I'm getting smarter. I kind of watched it and let it roll through commercial breaks, went out and did stuff during the breaks and, you know, cooked a couple of chicken things and then went back and zipped through all the commercials. Okay, so it was much easier to watch. It was about the decade of the 30s when baseball was amazing. But it was also, they spent a lot of time on Negro League baseball. And I thought to myself, I got to know more about Negro League baseball. So I ordered a book from Amazon.com about the Negro Leagues. I think it's called Shades of Gray. It came out 4 or 5 years ago. I'm excited about that. I'll be an expert. It's good. It's good to, you know, have the time to look at other things, you know? You know what I mean? I've never had time to do that before.
Now, Ken Burns did not write Shades of Gray. Who did?
No.
Do you know? Do you
remember? I got it. What did I do with it? I don't know. I forget who wrote it. It's kind of a comprehensive look at Negro League baseball. Did you ever? Awesome. I never went. But in Kansas City, when the Bills used to play Kansas City, the Negro League Baseball Museum is in Kansas City, and I've always wanted to go. Next time I get there, I want to go check it out.
Is there a Negro Leagues Hall of Fame? I'm ashamed that I have to
ask. I think there is in Kansas City, yeah. Oh, okay. The Museum and Hall of Fame. Hey, let's do What's for Lunch. We haven't done that in a while. What's for Lunch, where we decide among which topic are we in favor with. What's for Lunch? I'll tell you right now, Steve just had a peanut butter and honey sandwich. I'm wolfing down some vegetable beef soup, so literally – that's what for lunch. What would you do, Steve? Peanut butter and honey or vegetable beef soup? What's for lunch?
Well, I don't know. I like what I just had. It was a triple decker, so it had the honey between two slices of bread and the peanut butter between the top slice of bread and a third slice of bread. So it was big. Yeah, very good. Very good. The best part about it was it was brought to me. I didn't have to get up and go make it myself. So
sandwiches always taste better when somebody else makes them.
That's right.
That's true.
Exactly right.
But let's do really what's for lunch here. What's for lunch? Biggest breakout player for the Bills in 2020. Who is it? Devin Singletary or Ed Oliver? Ooh, those are two tough choices. Man, I could make an argument for either one, Steve, but I'll make the argument for Devin Singletary, who got a slow start to his rookie campaign with a couple of injuries, missed a game towards the end. I think he played 15, but he didn't really play a lot early on. The Bills seemed reluctant to put a lot on his plate early on, and then finally got more reluctant as the season goes along. For those reasons, and for general actually, he only played 12 games last year. For general, just because I think the offense is going to be better, I think Devin Singletary is going to have the bigger breakout season. But you can make the argument, and I can make the argument for Ed Oliver. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I agree with you. The only reason I lean towards the offensive guy, Devin Singletary, is because they're going to hand him the football. And I think that makes all the difference in the world. He's going to get a ton of carries. He's going to get a ton of receptions. He's going to be the top guy. Now, this all changes if they sign a guy like they did last year with Frank Gore or somebody else like that. But given the fact that Devin Singletary comes back as your number one running back, I think you got to give the nod to him because of the opportunities that he's going to get because of his position. No question that Ed Oliver, you kind of look for big things from him. But as playing a defensive tackle like he is, it's hard to envision him busting out and getting 12 sacks. He could, and I think he's going to play at the beginning of this year and move forward like he was playing at the end of last year. He was a handful at the end of last year. He kind of things started to click for him as to how he was going to play and how teams were defending him from the offensive side of the ball, defending his pass rush and protecting against him. I think he learned a lot, and I think that's going to pay big dividends. But because of the opportunities he's going to get, I'd lean toward Devin Singletary.
I'd lean toward him, but let me make an argument for Ed Oliver here. You know, Oliver got off to a slow start as well and lost his starting spot on a team that now is in the habit of rotating defensive linemen. I think he'll line up with the starters this coming season, and I think he'll stay in there. Got better as the season went along, learned how to play. I think he sort of refocused his efforts as the season went along and learned a lot from the Bills' strong team work ethic and the strong team culture, that he learned a lot about what it takes to succeed in the NFL. So there's my argument for Ed Oliver, although I would lean on Devin Singletary as having a bigger breakout year.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. I think that it makes a lot of sense, and it's harder for a guy at Ed's position to stand out. It's just more difficult.
Yep. All right, what's for lunch? Part two. Which team is in position to improve the most this offseason, the Miami Dolphins or the Buffalo Bills? I assume that question doesn't mean which team is going to improve in 2020 as much as it does in position to improve in the offseason. I'll take it how it's written. Because, look, I think the Dolphins, who, what, won five last year, are going to win two or three more than that this year. I think the Bills, with their schedule, and they were a pretty good team last year, will probably, you know, win one or maybe two games more this year. But this offseason, who can improve the most? It's clearly the Dolphins, right? Look, the Bills go into this draft now without a first-rounder. They've added Stephon Diggs. They don't have a need to improve that much in the offseason. They have to keep things together and get better, add a few pieces. They already have, but I think the Dolphins – have a need to improve this offseason. What do you think, Steve?
The Dolphins are going to improve way more than the Bills are going to be capable of improving. Now, the Bills, I think they have improved, no question about it. Tangibly, intangibly, whatever you want to slice it, the Bills have gotten to be a better team, but they won 10 games last year. If they get two games better, that's 12. If the Dolphins get five games better, that's only 10. So the Dolphins could take a step like the Bills did last year and improve greatly, and I think that would be a bigger improvement than the Bills winning an extra game or two. I still think the Bills are going to be a better football team when all is said and done at the end of 2020, but the Dolphins have so much more room starting, you know, 6 weeks ago than the Bills did. I think that's where the questions goes in favor of the Dolphins. They were so bad last year that they just have so much more room for improvement. And they've made some moves already that are going to help them. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think the Dolphins are going to improve the most this offseason.
What's for lunch part three? That's a good question, too. I'll tell you what, if the questions are always this good, I'd do what's for lunch every day. Part three, Cam Newton, starter or a backup this coming season? I'm going to go backup. Steve, I think there are significant health questions about Cam Newton and people wondering where he is in his career. I think a team that would sign Cam Newton and say to him right away, you're our starter, would be making a mistake. And I'd be surprised if anybody did that. But even when the season begins, I think he will be a backup to somebody. What do you think?
I think I'm going to say starter. And here's why. I think he will pick his spot to a point where he'll go somewhere where they're going to tell him, okay, Cam, you can compete. And we'll give you a chance to compete to be the starter. Someplace, well, you name it, like a Miami or any place else you want to name. And it's hard to find places like that. Denver. You could go to Denver and compete for a starting job with the guy they've got. Or you could go to even San Diego and compete with Tyrod Taylor. I think he'll pick a spot that will say, okay, Cam, we'll let you come in and at least compete. We're not going to give you the job. And if it's anything better than that, say, yeah, we'll let you start or we're going to draft somebody. Cam Newton still has a lot of good football in him, and I think he'll pick a spot that'll give him a chance to compete. And I think given that, I think he might be able to finagle his way into taking snaps on opening day. So I'd say that. I think he'll pick his spot to a place where he'll be able to compete, and he'll probably win that competition in camp.
So one more what's for lunch question Steve and I will debate. Who's the better AFC South team right now, the Indianapolis Colts or the Tennessee Titans? Noteworthy, we did not ask the question about the Houston Texans, who won the division. Or did they win it? Well, they were a playoff team last year from the AFC South and had a pretty decent season, won their wild card playoff game. But right now in the AFC South, which team is better, the Indianapolis Colts or the Tennessee Titans? Who do you have, Steve?
I'm taking the Indianapolis Colts. Phillip Rivers has got some football in him. They've got exactly the kind of offense built around him with the right support staff around him for him to be successful. Their offensive line is going to be dominant. So I would say the Indianapolis Colts. I think, and I've said it a ton, right after the season, Tennessee caught lightning in a bottle. That runs over. Let's see him do it again. You think Ryan Tannehill is going to have the kind of season for an entire season that he had in the last half of last year? I don't believe it, quite frankly. He may, but I don't believe it until I see it. And that team around him will probably not be as good or as sharp as it was at the last half of last season. So I'm thinking the Colts, at least in the early part of this coming season, are going to be a better team than the Titans.
I'm thinking the same way you are. I think the Colts are. I was thinking about this when Sam Monson, last segment, talked about Philip Rivers playing behind one of the great offensive lines in the league. That's going to make a difference. I think Rivers has a lot to offer, a lot more than Ryan Tannehill. I think it was outlier season for Ryan Tannehill. I don't anticipate that'll happen again. There you go. That's what's for lunch today. We didn't deal with the chicken wing or piece of fish between two pieces of white bread for a change. That's good, Steve. I'm happy about that.
That's one good reason to be off TV.
Yeah. All right, a break here, and then we're coming back with more. We got a phone lines open. We got one call teed up. We got three calls teed up. We'll come back and take those calls. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. Steve's at home. I'm at home. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back, John Murphy, C. Tasker, One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. Let's take a few phone calls here. Let's go to Robert in Toronto. Hello, Robert. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Hey, Steve. Just wanted to say thank you to you guys for the show. It makes a difference in my life up here, and I think to a lot of Bills fans all over the world. First off, my first point is the underrated move the Bills made this offseason is, I think, Tyler McTavish from the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think he's not only going to be a special teams guy, but I think he's going to be the third go-to linebacker for the Bills this year. Just wanted to get your feedback on that before I give you my second point.
So you would put Medicavage, you're putting him ahead of some of the other free agents the Bills have signed as far as free agent linebackers? You put him ahead of A.J. Klein, you think?
Well, he said underrated.
Underrated, yeah. But you're thinking he'll play some defense, is that right?
I think he's going to be able to play some defense, and I think by the end of the year he's going to be the guy that's going to be starting ahead of the other – linebackers besides our two starters.
Huh, interesting.
All right.
And what's your?
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see that, but it could be right. What do you think, Steve?
I think he's got a long way to go, no question. That's not why he was brought in, but certainly the Bills are going to give him every chance to succeed. You got to think if that happens, something happened with A.J. Klein. Something happened with the other options they had as well with whoever. Now, Medicavage has got some experience, there's no question, and he won't shy away from it, I'm sure. But listen, if that happens, you're right. It was a highly underrated signing.
Steve, I kind of like it to, you know, when you came to the Bills, you were just a special, not just, you were, you know, the best special teams player for the Bills, but later on in your career, you got to play some wide receiver. And I think if given the opportunity, like you had the opportunity finally, this kid could excel. And I think sometimes some guys just need the opportunity to be able to play. And I think with our coach and Leslie Frazier on defense, I think this guy's going to – I just got a feeling about this guy after I've watched some tape on him. And I think he's got the ability and he's got the chance to exceed expectations, let's say.
I'll say this. Guys who play special teams usually are pretty versatile athletes because you have to go backwards, you have to move forward, you know, you have to drop into return mode and protect on returns and block on returns. You have to go forward to attack and tackle guys. You have to take on blocks. You have to perform blocks. You got to run sometimes. And a guy like me, you had to run with the football as well as tackle the guy with the football. So special teams players who are really good and have proven to be really good are usually really versatile guys. And if that applies to Medicavage, then yeah, there's every chance in the world that they could give him a chance to excel at linebacker, and he's no doubt got the athletic ability to do it. So it'll be interesting to see if it happens.
Robert, what's your other point, please?
My second point was this is a bit off topic, but for the Bills' second round pick, I see us going receiver, and I had a question for both of you, and I talked about it with a buddy of mine. If we go receiver, and these are like the second tier guys. If we were left with LaVisca Chenault or Chase Claypool, I said to my buddy, I'd rather have Chase Claypool because I think they're kind of similar guys, like the speed of Claypool as opposed to LaVisca Chenault, and I wanted to hear what you guys had to think.
Go ahead, Steve. I like Claypool a lot, too.
Yeah, I do, too. I think Murph and I are both kind of leaning towards Claypool. We like what we saw at the combine. He ran extremely well, and his strengths were not the fact that he could run. And he ran like a 4.42 40 at the combine. It was really fast, and that was surprised a lot of people. He's big, too. He's, like you said, 6'3", 6'4". He's 230, so he's a big dude, and he still ran a 4.4 40. That's big, and I think that's why I lean towards him, because he can win 50-50 balls. He's a great possession receiver, meaning, you know, a high ball guy. He's a big body.
Yeah.
So I kind of like him. If you can get him in the second round, I wouldn't be surprised if they did take him, despite the fact that they've got a pretty good core already at the wide receiver.
Thanks, Robert. Let's go to Mark on Grand Island. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you today?
Good.
I was just calling to find out about the Carlos Hyde free agency and what it would do to our backfield. If we have the best, you know, threesome for wide receiver, adding someone with, like him with over 1,000 yards last year, would that give us the best 1-2 punch in the backfield?
Yeah, he would. He'd be something I'd really be interested in. And every day that goes by, you got to believe his price goes down a little bit, right? And so I don't blame the Bills for kind of waiting him out. A 1,000-yard receiver probably is looking for a big contract, probably not going to get it. And if the Bills wait long enough, they'll probably get him at a good deal, at a good price. Now, I will say this, Carlos Hyde or anybody else, I think Devin Singletary is the focal point of the Buffalo running game, but Carlos Hyde, would be a good change-up back to Devin Singletary. Different style, different body type, I think he'd be – I'd really like to see him here.
Yeah, Murph, you've been in love with Carlos Hyde ever since Houston released him and the other guy. What was his name? What was the other guy? Was it?
What's the name from Miami? The former Miami Dolphin guy.
Ivory? No, not. Miller. Miller.
Yeah, Lamar Miller. Yeah.
Lamar Miller. Those two guys got released the same day, and you were all over Carlos Hyde. And no question, Carlos Hyde's a proven back who will come in. And you know what I think? The Bills get him. It'll be just like a Frank Gore deal and all these other deals. It'll be a one-year prove-it deal, stay in the league, play well. You'll come in, you'll back up our young guy, but if you start playing well, you're going to get more carries, that kind of thing. And that would appeal to a player like Hyde. All he would be asked to do would be, listen, he's going to get – at first he may get 4, 5, 6 carries a game. If they go well, that makes Bandit – to 10 on that game, and then the next week he'll start at 10, and if he goes well again, he'll get 15. If you're a guy that can come into Buffalo and be productive, you're going to get carries as a running back, and it doesn't matter who's in front of you or who's behind you, but that also goes obviously for Devin Singletary as well. If he's knocking it dead, nobody else is going to get the football. So, but I think that appeals to a guy, Murph, a player coming in. Hey, if you can make the most of your opportunity, you're going to get more of them.
All right, we got a break. When we come back, Joel Corey, former NFL player agent, now a contract and a salary cap expert for CBSSports.com. Joel Corey, when we return, One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. We're coming to you from our homes, radio only today. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.